Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
Now, you'll notice that Jake did not say it was an exciting episode. I believe that promissory statement.
I made the statement for both of us. It's all right. You can accept it.
I will accept that you think it's exciting.
I think it's
when we talk about the economy.
I think it's exciting because of the opportunity that we have during the next 2 hours to say something on a live radio presentation that is so stupid that it will ruin our lives.
We have that opportunity.
We do. And the fact that at any moment I could open my mouth and say something that I will regret for the rest of my life, but I cannot take it back because this is live. You know, well, it's live, presuming that today is
the
22nd. November 22nd, the year of our Lord, 2014. I'm curious if anybody out there knows why November 22nd is a special day.
Come on. Everybody's going to know that.
You didn't.
I did, too.
Oh, you did.
Yeah,
oh,
I said.
Anyway, for those of you who don't, who are too young to remember my generation's 9/11, it's November 22nd. It's 11/22. This was the day that in Dallas, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, President of the United States, was assassinated. And I remember it entirely too well. I was going to school in Arlington, and I remember the children getting up on the tables and jumping up and down and clapping their hands when it was announced. And it was, it's hard to remember that today, but the Republicans hated him with a passion that is only matched by the degree to which they hate the current president. And they hated him with a passion, let me tell you. And so it puts a little perspective on things. So let's just hope that never happens again. Although Ronald Reagan, there was an attempted assassination. And so George H.W. Bush had an attempted assassination, not widely known by, but at least he was done by somebody who later hung for it.
Yeah, well, yeah, that has something to say positively for
Yeah, I think that we wiped out an entire country over that, so that, and we're still
just
wiping
the regime.
Well, we're still wiping. Yeah, but in order to get the regime, we invaded the country.
Right. How else would you? I mean,
well, you could just bomb him in, you know, that little portion where he is, but it wouldn't work anyway. So anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Personal Wealth Coach. This is a disclaimer, ladies and gentlemen. No, it's a disclosure.
We're not disclaiming anything.
We could disclaim. See, anything that you hear on this radio program does not constitute investment advice.
Right.
See, that's a disclaimer.
That is a disclaimer. Yeah. We're not claiming to provide investment advice on
right.
this program.
We do not give legal or tax advice.
Correct. Disclaiming that.
Cover before striking.
We are also not accredited as bomb removal teams.
Right. Exactly. Although we do have a disaster recovery plan.
Yes, we do.
And if you don't have one, well, shame on you. Okay, but the telephone, okay, well, we also probably ought to say that the Personal Wealth Coach is, in addition to being a weekly radio program, the name of an investment advisory wealth management firm located in Salado, Texas, registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission as our primary regulator. Okay, now you know that. Okay. Telephone numbers in here if you'd like to call and ask us a question. You know, we ought to add our years up.
The number of years we've been in business.
Yeah, I've been 32.
Collectively.
And you've
been
like
23.
Okay. So between us, we have 55 years of experience.
Yeah.
Somewhere between us. Neither one of us have it, so it's between us somewhere.
Right.
Anyway, we probe the depths of our 55 years of mistakes making. Because
right.
remember, You should learn from the mistakes of others because you can't live long enough to make them all yourself. Anyway, telephone numbers would be 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County.
Otherwise, it's 1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
And the headline in Barron's today, The Trader, which is generally the first place I go in Barron's when it is published on Saturday.
That sounds traitorous.
And I go in there and look, and it is the same headline that has been popping up for the last, I don't know how many weeks.
Well, you know why.
Dow S&P 500 hit new highs for the week.
Well, see, you save a lot of money on
just
writers.
Reprint it?
Just reprint the same headline. Let's see, you think of all the money that's being saved in the economics departments of the different newspapers. If you're talking about Barron's, all they have to do is, okay, what happened today? It's like doing the weather in San Diego. You just play reruns all the time, and it's okay.
Except when you don't.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Vito, I think basically Vito Racanelli.
Okay.
Doesn't have much of an imagination for headlines. He's the guy who writes The Trader. Vito.
Vito.
Vito writes The Trader.
Okay.
A little joke on Italians there. Sorry about that. As a matter of fact, not only did the Dow and the Standard Poor's 500 hit new highs right at the end of the week, they broke out of a trend line that has been percolating along since, January, February time frame. Admittedly, we've seen some big dips, but there's a trend line that's been kind of percolating along, and that trend line makes an assumption of low but probably reasonably steady growth in the United States economy, and it can be scared off from time to time, as it was in October. And by the way, we've looked very hard at the October near correction. It had been 0.5% further fall.
I'm calling it a correction. I'm rounding up the way the government does. If they can say 59.5 equals
down.
60, and if they
and
can
9.5
say
equals
yeah,
10.
And 70.5, I'm going to say I'm going to be a government bureaucrat for a minute and round that up to an actual correction, even though it was a short one.
Yes. Well, corrections tend to be short, you know. That's it. Anyway, we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir, a long-time listener. I was traveling this week and heard on another radio station, they mentioned relative to the U.S. economy, Japan has twice as much debt.
You got it.
Which surprised me. I mean, you always hear about the in and out of the recessions in the last decade in the 80s. Can you enlighten us on that, please?
Sure, sure.
How come we haven't heard that before? Hang up and listen. Thank
okay.
You.
Good question. We talk about it
well, I haven't
quite
heard
often.
Yeah, it's among economists like us.
Yeah, it's kind of a well-known fact in the world of economics.
Yeah.
When you're standing in a circle of economists, first thing you should do is leave. But if you have to stay because you are one, then...
Well, if you've got insomnia, that's the place to go, you know, circle of economists.
Right. So the Japanese economy has been a basket case, and that's what the technical term in the economic world for Japan is a basket case,
right.
In that, since the 90s, they have gone nowhere. Their equivalent of our market index is the Nikkei. And it used to be
10 times,
and now it's equal.
Yeah, so basically, in relative terms, the Japanese stock market has lost 90% against the U.S. stock market,
right,
measured against one another.
And in the middle of all of this, they had a big banking problem. So example. Well,
they still have it.
In the 90s, they had basically the same banking problem with real estate that we just went through, the 2007 through 2008 and so on. Only they didn't let anything fail at all. They propped up everything, and they didn't restructure the organizations in the bank. So the banks still have all that debt, the bad debt, that hasn't been paid on their books. It hasn't been cleaned off.
And some of it is from the 1990s.
Right. And it's sitting there, and the government has taken interest rates to about zero, and they've stayed there.
Actually, they pioneered the concept of taking them below zero.
Right. Yeah. Actually, they were paying people
charging money to companies to have banks to have deposits on. By the way, the Europeans just started that. Did you hear about that?
Oh yeah.
The Europeans are now charging large corporations money to have their money deposited in the European system.
Right. It basically, what I was saying, if you put a deposit at a bank, you pay the bank to make sure the money's there when you left it. I mean,
Did you know we did that in the 1930s in the United States?
Oh, yeah. We haven't done it in a long time, but it is a sign of lack of trust. People do not trust the banks, so they're willing to pay a bank money to make sure that their money stays there. Where we are, we have a lot of trust. We're a little bit upset that the banks aren't paying us to use our money.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the other issue. part of the reason why the banks in Japan are charging people to hold their deposits is because they're not giving loans almost at all. If you want to buy a house in Japan, you better come up with the cash.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't come up with the cash, you don't get a house.
In both cases, and I say in both cases, meaning Europe and Japan, austerity was practiced for quite a while, and the conservatism, both the Japanese government, by the way, makes the most conservative anything in the United States look like wild-eyed liberals.
Yes.
Okay,
their relationship with the corporations is also very different from what we have in
well,
the
United
States.
Well, they have a tight
one. Very tight.
And
they're still family organizations.
Yeah, and you could say that about the conservative side of the United States electorate and government.
That's
I mean, they're
true.
Really, really tightly
the Koch
linked.
The brothers and, yeah.
Koch, I think it is.
Koch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to say what it sounds like.
Yeah,
it
I won't
should
say that,
yeah.
Right. But the Japan has this advantage when it comes to immigration from the conservatives' perspective in that they don't have a river. They have an ocean.
Yeah.
And they don't allow, they basically have locked out foreigners, locked out in many cases, foreign products. They have done every. Basically, if you take a look at the political position in Japan, and you line it up next to what the Tea Party wants to do in the United States, they're pretty close.
Yeah. Now there has been a big stir in Japan.
A big stir. In the stir fry.
Stir fry has always been big in Japan,
okay.
But yeah. So Abe. Abe, the new prime minister, we still call him the new prime minister, even
right.
though he's been there several years now,
right.
came in and...
Whose name is spelled like Abe Lincoln, Abe.
Right,
yeah.
But it's pronounced Abe for some reason.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, they should just stick to their...
Just call him Abe.
Abe.
Yeah.
So Abe came in and stirred up the economy. He started re-regulating banks. He started a project where the government... pumped a bunch of money into the economy instead
mm-hmm.
of the reverse, the whole concept of cutting back everywhere. They pumped a bunch of money into the economy. The economy took off.
And then?
And the part of the thing that allowed him to be able to pump that money into the economy was an agreement to put a big sales tax in on
everything.
A new sales tax on top of the already existing taxes. And when that hit... Their
people
economy
stop, people stop buying things.
Cratered. And by cratered, when we talk about a recession here, we talk about a negative half a point in GDP. They did a negative 8 points in GDP. That's 16 times what our recession would
and
be.
And in the next quarter, they did a negative 1.6. So they're technically, by our definition, in a recession right now.
Right. And Abe right now is in the process of saying, let's suspend the additional taxes that are coming in. Not the ones that already just cratered the economy, but the additional ones that are about to go in. Let's suspend those because we're about to really hurt ourselves.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons that Jeff, and this is just my position.
Jeff, he's speaking about himself in the third person.
Yes.
Which is always a little bit scary.
It's a little bit disconcerting, too, for me.
When I talk about me in the third person, I'm always nervous about myself. I don't believe in talking anybody behind
my
back.
If you say me, then second person. You'd have to say when I talk about Jacob in the second person.
I thought me or I would be the first person.
I is first person. Well, I guess me is first person,
yeah.
too. So what's second person? Now, when I talk about... Okay.
Anyway. You can talk about me.
I
in
can't.
Second person.
Okay.
But if I talk about me, I'm in the third person. The party of the third part is just confusing.
But there's only two people in here, so how can we have a third? Oh. That was like the experience that between us
it's
we
like,
have.
Right. The Green Party.
Got it.
That's the third party involved
right.
is the Green Party,
yes.
and they're not really viable. So
I thought they were libertarians, but anyway.
Well, one of them.
Yeah, anyway. The point we want to make about Japan, and I'm recognizing I'm getting some people angry here.
Uh-oh.
The problem... And why I don't think the fair tax will ever get a hearing is because...
And I love the fair tax.
I know. Conceptually, idealistically, I love the fair tax. But I can also tell you that raising the price on everything 23%,
yeah.
no matter what you say, good things will happen down the road as a result of this, will be an instant cause of people not buying things.
Well, see, the idea behind the fair tax, for those of you who don't know what that is a complete replacement of our existing tax code with, in essence, a sales tax.
Right.
And the idea there is because you're removing the income tax, prices won't go up when you put in the sales tax.
Yeah, sure.
The problem with that is in the practical aspect of it, two things, massively big things. We only have estimates as to what the revenue will be. So if we get rid of the old tax and bring in the new tax, the government may not get paid. They don't like that idea for some reason. I don't understand why that might be, but they don't like the idea of not getting paid. Secondly, because of that insecurity by the government, it's unlikely that we'll get rid of the first tax while we're putting in the new tax, so prices will go up, will be a problem.
Prices would go up anyway because, you know, you're talking about half of the people in the economy who have income.
Half
of the people who actually have income don't pay income tax.
Correct.
But they do pay payroll taxes.
Yes.
Which is effectively an income tax that reduces their pay.
Well,
okay?
Nobody's suggesting they get rid of the payroll tax.
That's right. But this is the point. So you're going to leave for half the economy, you're not going to cut their taxes at all. You're just going to raise the price of everything 23%.
You're supposed to give them a rebate check every month.
At some point down the road, they may or may not get a rebate check.
But the reality is that if the money's not coming in, the rebate check's not going to go out either.
So basically, you raise the price on everything 23%. For instance, here where we have roughly an 8.5% sales tax on average across the state of Texas,
right. That
would mean there would be a little over 30% sales tax on the purchase of everything. Whoa! Instant depression.
Right. And this actually is what...
By the way, instant inflation, too.
Yeah, this is an important aspect of the fair tax. You heard us say that we like the idea of the fair tax, so don't hold this against us. It's just the reality. In Texas, if you look at the prices of goods... And then you go to Louisiana or New Mexico you go to Oklahoma, it's not significantly different.
But we throw a tax on top of it.
But we have a sales tax, and other states have sales tax and income taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not significantly different, which means that if we apply a tax on top of it and the price didn't go down by the amount of the income tax in other states...
Yeah, well, the state income taxes would stay in place, too, in the fair tax.
If you follow what I just said, the idea behind the sales tax, the fair tax, is that the price of the good will drop because the income tax is not there. We don't have an income tax in Texas, and our prices are at par with the states around us who have an income tax in their states and also have sales tax,
right.
Which means that the practical aspect of this is that businesses do not lower taxes immediately because of lower prices immediately because of taxes.
Right.
They just don't do it. They want to wait and see what happens.
Businesses don't lower prices unless we have deflation and desperation.
And if we do lower prices based on desperation, that's a really bad sign.
Yeah, that's called deflation, which we have a little bit of right now. By the way, the consumer price index last 6 months up 0.2%.
Very nice.
6 months.
Over the last
6 months.
6 months, the consumer price index.
Price rise in the consumer price. I stumbled across that by accident.
Yeah. And
I was looking at our figures, the ones we collect monthly. And I was going back and seeing inflation actually was negative for 3 months in a row in there. Whoa. And the point is that
it's only up 1.7% versus a year ago.
Yeah. And
so 6%.
We are hovering.
Or 6 months.
To use a, it was hovering, but now it's hovering. On the verge of deflation ourselves.
Yes. We're right on the edge.
By the way, the Europeans have announced that they are charging banks money to leave money on deposit at the European Central Bank, which is to discourage people saving money and to encourage them to actually spend the money.
That's not a good idea, guys.
As they slip into deflation, the Japanese are in deflation. They have been for a long time. And the Europeans are apparently currently deeply concerned that they're going to slip into recession. The market rose. The reason I bring this in process of talking about the market highs that we hit on Friday.
Right.
The market rose because the Chinese have lowered their interest rates and are pumping money into the economy.
Yeah.
The Europeans have said, we're about to. The Japanese said we are going to do this.
They're already doing it
right now.
They're already doing it.
In other words, the rest of the world is suddenly looking up and seeing what we did in the Great Recession.
That worked.
And saying, golly bum, your Federal Reserve is pretty smart. That worked. We ought to try doing the same thing. The one out on this in, among actual recognized nations is Russia.
Yeah.
Who is buying where they are. Now, remember,
the action of the Russian bank, by the way, is a direct extension. They've just invaded countries.
Right.
See, that's better than raising interest rates.
Right. That works better. the Bundesbank did that in the 1930s, too.
Yeah.
Anyway, particularly if you invade countries that have lots of industrial resources and oil.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, the Ukrainians do and did. So the point is that the Russians, if you recall, had this brilliant idea about dumping the dollar and buying euros.
Right.
So they did that for quite a while. So now they have decided that since that was a really bad idea, they've decided to dump dollars and buy gold. So there's two organizations in the world who are encouraging you to buy some gold out there. Actually, there's three.
There's more than that, but these are two major ones.
And I love this. You guys, listeners, are going to love me on this. Okay, I'm going to start.
By that, he means you're going to be upset.
ISIS, Putin, and Fox are all telling
Fox
you to buy gold.
We may have some buy gold advertisements on this program, but we don't recommend it. We'll get in trouble for that too. Before the advertisements are even played, we're saying, "Don't do it." I've got something else that I want to talk about. I was gone last week. You may have noticed, and in my return, I may have left my brain behind. I replaced it with snot.
Oh, let's not talk about things like that on the radio.
Yes. So if I get a little snotty, that's why.
You've always been a little snot.
So, I've been in Canada. I've been in Alberta, Canada, specifically. Yes, I've been in Canada, eh? So, I am able to speak very directly about a pipeline incident that just happened in the Senate and speak directly about what the Albertans think of the whole thing. And
I hope they think we're really dense for not allowing a pipeline.
Right. Well, we are. It's really silly. The Keystone Pipeline is what we're talking about here. But specifically, it's the Keystone XL expansion. Are you familiar with the Keystone Pipeline?
Right, I am. Just want to make one that's already there a little bigger and take a couple of shortcuts.
Well, yeah. Yeah, we already have a pipeline going to Alberta. It just goes
it
to
isn't big enough.
All it goes from Alberta almost over to Winnipeg, which is very laterally weird, goes across the prairie and then heads south through North Dakota and South Dakota. We're talking about building a piece that goes from Montana through part of North Dakota and part of South Dakota.
Right.
But connects back up to the original pipeline.
Right. It's a shortcut and it makes it be able to carry more oil.
Right. And for some reason, this pipeline is seen as dangerous where the other one isn't. And I'm a little confused about that.
I understand.
That basically what the proponents of it are saying is that this is a great thing and we need a pipeline. And the opponents of it are saying pipelines are dangerous, you're going to destroy everything.
Well, actually, I think the opponents are saying that the Alberta oil sands extraction process puts more greenhouse gases in the air than standard oil processes, therefore putting a pipeline in to encourage the Canadians to extract their own oil rather than buying our oil is a bad idea.
Well, here's the problem with that. They're already doing it.
Right.
They're already pumping it.
Right.
They're not going to stop because we don't put it in. It's just going to be more expensive.
And they'll eventually get tired of waiting on us and ship it to China.
Yeah, or build their own refineries.
Right.
Which the United States really doesn't want. I mean, so, they have the capability right now. It just, they're hoping that we will pass the law and we'll have a pipeline put in. We will. When the new Senate comes in, it's going to get passed.
Well, the president could always veto it.
Well, they had a 59 vote for it in the Senate this time around.
Right.
Which you're getting, you know, they need more than that.
Mm-hmm. They'll need 60 votes, which they'll probably get override.
They need more than 60 votes in this particular case. They need 70 votes.
Really?
Yes, but they'll get it.
They probably will.
The reason why is because we're talking about internation agreements.
Ah.
So this is where the normal filibuster stuff goes out the window. The same reason why when a treaty is ratified, which is another little piece of this that I have to get to here in a minute. When a treaty is ratified, it takes more votes.
Right.
We have a treaty in peril here.
But let me explain for those who don't understand, because I don't understand it, but I can explain it.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
I understand. I don't sympathize with it.
Sound like most commentators.
No, I mean, I really do understand the process and I understand the thinking. I certainly don't agree with it, and I can't imagine why anybody who had in the right mind would. And that's where the left, in this case, has decided to draw a line, and they've decided to play Alamo. You know, it's like Sam Houston told Travis to get the heck out of the Alamo, reminding Travis that he and his band of ragtag militia took the Alamo from professional Mexican troops because it was an indefensible position. And they chose to stay there anyway.
Right. A little silly.
So what in this case, the environmentalists who are part of the Democratic Party have decided to draw a line in the Alberta sands and say that here we're going to stand our ground on this one thing, and if we can win this one thing, it'll be a moral victory. And we will be celebrated, and it will be a move in the right direction for stopping greenhouse gases and global warming or whatever idealistic thing they want to stop. The fact is, A, they ain't going to stop it. B, this is a stupid place to fight a battle. And C, they're going to lose.
Now here's a problem, and this is one I am obviously, as you have heard, a proponent of the idea of putting in the pipeline. It seems silly not to. But we may be violating a treaty to do it.
Whose treaty?
The treaty with the Lakota Sioux. There is a reservation that the pipeline would have to go through. And that reservation is owned by a sovereign nation. And the Lakota Sioux have voted to not allow it across their reservation, which means that the pipeline either has to be revoked or moved, or eminent domain has to be declared against a sovereign nation, which has happened in the past. The railroads have done that. Eminent domain has been seen as a way of getting across treaty lands. However, again, you need a higher number of votes in the Senate. So there's a couple of things here that are big issues. The one, it's an agreement with another nation, Canada. Two, it's a violation of an agreement with another nation, the Lakota Sioux. These are not things that they talk about in the press. They talk about CO2.
Actually,
they talk about greenhouse gases.
It'd be really, really simple. The Lakota Sioux do not want the pipeline. Mm-hmm. The United States wants the pipeline. Fine, Lakota, you don't have to have the pipeline. However, you know all that money we pay you out of the Treasury every month? You don't really need that either. House of Representatives has to do defund.
They can defund it, but it's in violation of a treaty.
Mm-hmm. And it'll take a long time to get to the Supreme Court.
Well, that's just not the way that we want to be doing business.
Okay.
I'm actually surprised that you said that. This is on the same level as the U.S. Constitution. A treaty with a foreign power.
Yeah, but it isn't a foreign, it's a domestic power.
It is a foreign power.
You're saying
held in a domestic area.
The Lakota Sioux constitute a sovereign nation.
They do, absolutely. It's the. That's what this whole thing is.
Excuse me, but that's silly. I know it's true.
It's true.
I know it's true.
But how can
we exercise eminent domain across a sovereign nation?
We've done it before.
I'm just saying, it's silly.
There's a lot of silliness here, and that's part of the issue. They're sort of considered commonwealth, sort of considered territory, but it's the same thing as if Puerto Rico were to say no to putting in a naval base.
They did.
They could. They do. They can do it.
But we kept the naval base.
We kept the naval base, but it took a lot of votes in the Senate.
Yeah.
Now, if Puerto Rico ever votes to be completely its own country instead of a territory,
we'll say goodbye to them very nicely.
Right. We'll say goodbye to them very nicely, and we will have to remove our base.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Just like
eventually.
We have a treaty. Long time. We have a 99-year treaty with Cuba.
Yeah.
That says we can keep Guantanamo on Cuba.
Yep.
And at the end of 99 years, we'll remove it, maybe.
Right.
If we feel like it.
Yeah. We don't have that with Puerto Rico. They're a territory. We didn't need it.
All right. Could be.
So that's what I'm talking about. When we're talking about a sovereign nation who, I mean, one of the most despicable things that I saw in the history of the United States is when Andrew Jackson moved the Cherokee Nation. There was a treaty. The Supreme Court said, mm-hmm. You can't do it. Andrew Jackson responded, how many brigades does the Supreme Court
regiments.
Command? How many regiments does the Supreme
does
Court
John command? Marshall, how many regiments does John Marshall have?
Right, so he broke the Constitution. The Constitution clearly outlines how we're supposed to treat treaties, which means that we need to get into...
We're supposed to treat treaties?
Yes. Okay, somebody needs to turn their radio down. That's,
yep.
We got a caller coming in here. Caller, you are on the air.
Okay. One other question. Hey, what's your top five things that could tank the stock market and relative priorities?
Okay. I always have on my radar something that is extremely unlikely, but I always include it in my top five. It's not the top one, but I need to throw it in there anyway.
What's that?
And that is extreme natural disaster of some kind.
An asteroid, no, better yet, a comet. We know where the asteroids
right.
are.
No, well, we don't know where all the asteroids
well,
are.
Well, but we know we're pretty good on identifying the big ones that might really do serious harm who are zipping in and out of Earth orbit.
Yeah, yeah.
But as Sky and Telescope magazine pointed out,
we have lots of people
looking for comets all the time because there's a pretty steady stream.
Mm-hmm.
Of comets that have never been around before that drop out of the Oort cloud.
And they just start zipping by.
And they just kind of zip down in our direction. We spotted one recently about 6 weeks before we thought it was going to hit Mars. It missed Mars by 80,000 miles. So that's not much.
Not much at all.
And a comet could, a comet smacking the Earth someplace would definitely cause the stock market tank.
Okay, so I'm going to throw in a bunch of other natural disasters. A major earthquake in California that
right.
knocks down a lot of buildings.
And a lot of other stuff.
So I'm saying this not because I think it's a high risk this year, but at some point we're going to have something like that.
Right.
So I'm putting that in as probably number five.
That could cause it. I could give you a short-term one.
Yeah, if that ever leaves my top five, I am a little bit insane.
I will tell you the one that's number one on my list right now. It's
mm-hmm.
certainly not a. It's absolutely not a certainty. But number one on my list right now is that there is a significant number of Republicans in the House of Representatives and a
yep.
few in the Senate who, because of the executive order that was read off a couple of nights ago.
Yep.
Have said, let's not pass the funding bill to keep the government open through Christmas.
Yeah, that could cause a recession.
That would cause, if you remember 2011, we got a severe correction and a very nasty drop in portfolio values, and it took us quite a long time to come out of that.
Yeah.
And it was all because the Republicans in the House of Representatives decided to shut down the government to spite the president, which is suicidal in five or six different ways.
In this particular case, it wouldn't even stop the action because really what we have here, the president said they're not going to enforce something. You cannot take away the funding to not do something.
And actually, the agency that is charged with all of this is self-funded.
Yeah.
But as a way of getting even with the president, there have been a number of influential members of the House of Representatives who have stated they will very seriously oppose and try to block passage of the government funding, the continuing resolution to keep the government open through the end of the year. Now, very frankly, if they succeed, it will cost us trillions of dollars. It will cause the stock market to tank. They will get the reputation as the Grinch that stole Christmas. We are anticipating, by the way, across the board right now, an over 4% increase in Christmas spending over last year, which is what a lot of retailers are depending on this year to get them into the black. This is what Black Friday is all about. And to turn the economy around and get things rolling again. So that's on my current list, number one on my current list of things to be concerned about is that the members of the House of Representatives will take a shotgun and blow one of their feet off to get even with the president.
Yeah, that would be really silly, but also well within the realm of possibility.
We've done it before.
It tends to be an issue, and I'm going to weigh in on here that what the president did, as strange as this sounds, I'm going to make a bunch of enemies here.
Yep.
But what the president did was brilliant strategically.
And it was also very well precedented in that every president going back to Eisenhower has issued an executive order at some point preventing enforcement
of some
section of illegal aliens.
Right. So what he did was lose an election and prime the Republicans to get really unpopular.
His strategy was magnificent.
Right. What he's just done, if the Republicans are led by the Tea Party anti-immigration concept and they do really silliness there, basically Paul Ryan,
mm-hmm.
and Boehner have been trying to get an immigration deal together for 3 or 4 years, and they can't get support in their own party to do it.
Right. The one that passed the Senate was heavily voted for by Republicans in the Senate. But
the House...
There have been... The surveys in the House have said again and again and again, if it ever comes to the floor, it's going to get approved.
But it won't go to the floor because the Tea Party folks are keeping it in committee.
Right. Well, that's actually it actually came out of committee, and the speaker stated, I will not allow a vote on the floor.
Right. Well, and this is because the Tea Party revolt concept.
Right.
It basically would push the Republican into two parties.
Right.
The Republican Party into two parties.
And it'll be the Tea Party and the Republican Party.
Right. And if that happens, the Democrats win.
Right. And if you don't pass it, then the Democrats win.
And the Tea Party is saying, well, I'm going to stick to my guns, my principles, and I'm not going to switch at all. And I love what Ronald Reagan said about that. If there is a candidate that you can agree with 80% of the time, you should support that candidate to the hilt. He said, I would run off a cliff for a candidate I supported 80% of their decisions.
I hate to break in here, but this is a for-profit radio station owned by Town Square Media.
We have to play some
commercials. Town Square Media has had some people pay them to run commercials on this particular radio. Now, they call it officially a show.
It is a show. They say it on the list.
As in show and tell. So we have to actually play some commercials. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone numbers in here on the other side of commercials, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And so we are going to play some important messages which people have paid Town Square Media to play on our program, and we'll be back on the other side.